and welcome. I am Piers Ridyard, CEO of the decentralized finance protocol Radix, a public ledger entirely focused on bringing DeFi into the mainstream. This is our podcast and show, The DeFi Download, a show about decentralized finance and all things crypto, where we dive into the details of the projects, assets, and services that are powering the DeFi revolution. Today, I'm joined by Adrian, aka CryptoBurb, a crypto and traditional markets technical analysis specialist and chemical engineer. Adrian, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, I'm very happy to be on the show, and I hope it's recording because it's not showing so on my...
It is definitely recording, awesome. Don't worry.
I love it.
So if you could just start by like a little introduction to yourself, like what you do in the crypto world and beyond, and a little bit about like what you're seeing in the crypto markets today, like what's happening and what's making you excited.
Yeah, I'm very happy. My name is Adrian. Yeah, I'm 28 this year, actually. As you said, you know, I'm a trader, right? I'm a certified technical analyst. I'm also the founder and CEO of the Bird Nest, one of the largest and most reputable trading communities since 2017. I'm also co-founder of Yellowbird. And this also kind of like all together gives me quite a, you know, 360 degree view up on the markets. I can see the markets, you know, both from the retail side and the actual sort of like a business side, from the service providers and the takers and the users. Along, you know, working with a lot of different projects in the space, you know, such as Radix, this like generates, I think, generational opportunities, you know, in the market. And it's not only due to the overall sort of like, you know, just very, very, very good contacts, very good networking aspects, but also from the purely investing point of view, right? And this market, cryptocurrency market right now, it's definitely very strong, right? It's definitely very strong. This trend will definitely disappear at one point, but for now we can just all enjoy, you know, the upside rallies for Bitcoin, which is sort of like the main player, right? If we watch, you know, the technical metric that is called market dominance, right, which pretty much tells, you know, how much of the percentage participation the weight of Bitcoin market cap, you know, when compared to the total market cap of crypto, then we are about 61-62% perhaps, which means that, you know, about 60-40 split, there is, you know, pretty much like giving the better chances and the better odds for the Bitcoin traders rather than the altcoin traders. So it means, you know, that currently, as long as Bitcoin keeps pressing up, we would see altcoins being sort of like in the building mode. The momentum is building, you know, the projects are building, amazing projects are really happening right now. And based on the cyclicality of the market, based on the financial market cycles, most of the projects, sadly, those that are lacking, you know, solid fundamentals, those that are lacking actual development and a very strong leadership, right? Which definitely I couldn't ever tell, you know, of Radix, because Radix is having extremely strong and powerful team. Yeah, exactly, right? So I think we are going to, like, you know, you and I, we're actually going to hop on another couple of podcasts in the future, like within the next couple of years, so you're not going anywhere. But most of the projects are, you know, and most of the projects are going to disappear. So speaking strictly sort of like from the Bitcoin perspective, like shedding light on the Bitcoin perspective, we are, in my opinion, in one of the final stages of the market. Like, there is the metric that is called NUPL, that is net unrealized profit and loss. I can later on show off some charts. This just tells, you know, how much money is left unrealized profits, right, on the table, right? Which serves as the liquidity pool for the whales, for the institutions.
Right.
And when this one peaks, when the liquidity peaks after a strong rally in the bull market, you know, after 10x, 20x profits, then this is the perfect time for the big money to exit.
So before we dive into like these like technical analysis points that I think are really interesting, like let's just talk a little bit about what do you think it is that, like, what's caused this bull run? Like, what are the fundamentals that have driven up to this point? And how long do you think this is going to be going for? Like, what's driving that for a medium term view?
Yeah, this is a perfect question. In fact, we need to go back in time, you know, to the exact day that the bull market sort of like started. And it started when the bear market ended, right? So the bear market ended, exactly, right? The bear market ended. You would be surprised, man. You would be surprised how many people actually don't get it right. It's, you know, the market reversal came actually in the mid-December, or in the third week of the fourth week of December of 2018, where we saw this 3120 lows. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much like that initiated, you know, that was
so the just to make sure that people have got that, that's $3,120 per Bitcoin, which is exactly the lowest point that Bitcoin got to in 2018, which exactly is really funny, because during that time I met Chris Boniski, and he was, and I was like, what are you buying at the moment? He's like, Bitcoin. Like, what else am I going to be buying? And like, I thought then, I was like, this guy, like, he's insane. Like, Bitcoin is probably going to stay here for ages. And like, no, he was bang on the money.
Exactly. Yeah. And, yeah, you were seeing, you know, a lot of sort of like captions, a lot of headlines, you know, saying Bitcoin is dead, it's never going to recover, right? People have just lost, you know, 90% of their entire lifetime savings. You know, they went broke literally. So that was the time that the market sort of like reversed, right? I mean, it reversed, it stopped the bear market, and it actually, you know, turned into slow accumulation for the next four months, right? Mm-hmm. And to make things funnier, actually the solid breakout, you know, within this sort of like a consolidation range, it occurred on the, well, on April 1st, right? Which is the April is full. Since then, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, because you were asking about the reasons behind the bull market. So the reasons is, of course, you know, the pretty much like the demand growing over the supply. And demand sort of like advantage came in, as far as I'm concerned, from one of the big players named Panther Capital. Mm-hmm. I may be wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, those were the responsible, one of the responsible people for the institutions for reversing the market, because they're sort of like, there was a market buying candle on the April Fool, and it was it was $1,000 candle. It was like 20% back then. It was really strong demand pushing, and that's how it started. Right, so it started with a single sort of like a player breakout.
It's funny because like I have this debate all of the time, and I'm sure that we can have plenty of debates on it. I fundamentally don't believe in technical analysis. I think that technical analysis is a mask behind something that like there's the fundamentals of the thing, right? Like, what is driving the fundamentals? And then there's the way in which people read the market and make decisions based on how the market is trading. But like, fundamentally, my view is always like, if you like something, buy it. And if you don't like it anymore, sell it. Like, any more than that, you end up getting in this like, this mad place where you're like just second guessing everything that you're doing in the market. So I think it's partly because I know how addictive that's going to be, and I don't want to do that. But like, so we've got Pantera coming in, and we've got a huge green candle, huge $1,000 green candle. Like, first, could you just explain what that means? And secondly, like, why do you think that happened in the first place? Like, what do you think was happening in the broader spectrum of things that were making Bitcoin still a good buy, still a thing that these institutions were bullish on in 2018? And like, how has that narrative continued from there to where we are now?
Yeah. I mean, to start with, there was, of course, fundamental reason for that, right? Because in the long-term perspective, the only thing that matters is fundamentals, right? That's 100% confirmed and another question. And fundamental analysis actually just sheds the light on the long-term directions,
right?
Which is what technical analysis can only confirm, but it would never proceed in this way, right? So investing, let's say, on the traditional markets, you know, you could base your decisions, you know, fundamentally based on the macroeconomics, based on the interest rates, the bonds rates, right? The commodities, you know, pretty much like preceding the actual inflation directions. And on top of that, you know, when it with regards to crypto, there are not really, let's say, so many, I would say, fundamental reasonings when compared to the traditional market, other than the cyclicality of the markets, right, which is sort of like, you know, the cyclical behavior of people. This is what pretty much like technical analysis also just focuses on. But, you know, the fact that Bitcoin was cheap back then. Nobody wanted to buy the Bitcoin. Nobody wanted to buy because it was debt. You know, fear and greed index was an extreme fear. People were fearing. People had just lost their entire lifetime savings, as I said. So the effect was that Bitcoin was super cheap, and somebody just took an opportunity of it, right? So took an advantage, and that's how it started. So it always starts with one whale. It always starts with. It's not that the entire sort of like whale network over the planet just decide calls them, you know, and okay, guys, we're going in. Right? it's about actually like when you have an impact of the market, when you have proportionally, you know, just big stake in a market, a big stake, or a big stakeholder, then you can decide about the market directions because those are responsible for the reversals, for the main swings, right? It's not that an average show dumping $100 position that reverses the bull market, right?
Right.
It's billions being poured down on the poor retails.
Right. Right. So like, how long do you think that this started in 2018, the reversal started in 2018, it took a long time of accumulation, right? We were like, there was things being drawn off the market, but overall the market was still like, there was a small number of very wealthy long-term investors who during this period went through accumulation, like for example, Placeholder, for example, Pantera, for example, Multicoin, all these guys. And also the hedge funds, you know, like Mike Novogratz and like all these guys who are just coming in and going, look, it looks oversold. Mm-hmm. I like fundamentally Bitcoin for the next 10 years. I'm going to go buy as much as I can and stick it on balance sheet. When that definitely didn't feel like in 2018, like we were at the end of the bear market and starting the bull. Like when did that, what caused it to pass from like, accumulation without much price effect to it starting to actually have a noticeable impact on the price?
Yeah, so this is a question over the sort of like market cycle stages. You know, every market cycle, the bull market starts with an accumulation, and then after you see there's the sort of like a breakup of accumulation that reported again. I'm not sure if I'm 100% correct, so but assuming this was actually factually the Pantera Capital that pumped in back then. Then this is what initiated, you know, pumping through the main sort of like resistances. That's what attracted the attention. That's what sort of like gets, you know, you see headlines, you see newspapers, you see media, you know, you see some overall interest. Or you see overall interest. I mean, I can remember like CT Crypto Twitter back in 2018, you know, it looked like a ghost town. Like nobody lived there anymore.
Right. Right?
You know what I'm saying? So now this sort of like, you know, then turns into a participation or an expansion of the market. And the participation is driven by the crowds, right? By the crowds, by hedge funds. So the funds, as funds as the regular companies, sort of like, you know, they usually tend to get late. You know, they usually tend to get late within the markets unless they make money, the funds make money of the operating fees, right? Of the custom, like not the custody fees, but the you pay the fees for the funds, right?
Right.
For withdrawing funds, some penalties if you want to withdraw prematurely, and so the more clients they have, the more money they make, of course, right? It's like a regularly operating company. They have the managers, the fund managers, which are very often pressed, you know, from the bosses, from the board, right? That is telling them just follow up the norms, right? Do up the numbers, like improve the numbers and so on and so forth. So, which makes them often make wrong decisions. And this is actually confirmed that most of the hedge funds, most of the funds, they underperform against the market itself.
Right.
Right. Which is confirmed. This is the reason. It's human psychology. And it pretty much like, you know, just then later turns into a very aggressive bubble-ish sort of like distribution of peaks. This is very typical for Bitcoin, so that it doesn't really channel up, you know, for years. It's like grains, for example, like wheat, oat, you know, soybeans. But it usually, I mean, it always goes up, you know, crazy amount of times, right? And then it just goes down, retraces 80 to 90% on average. So that is very typical to bubbles. And knowing that there were many incentives from the fundamental point of view, because the main fundamental sort of like point and reason why assets are moving is the fluctuations between the demand and supply, of course, right? So if the supply is shrinking, and it is apparently because sort of like that's the deflationary model, you know, coming from the Bitcoin sort of like settings within the white paper, right? From Satoshi Nakamoto. then the deflationary sort of like model stands opposed to the overall inflationary economics, you know, the inflationary macro economics that come with decreasing, you know, infinite decreasing the interest rates. Of course, we are currently, you know, meeting the criteria for real negative interest rates. So it's like inverted yield curve.
Right.
You actually pay banks to store your money, right?
Right.
And you lose because of the inflation on top of it. So it's crazy. Right. So Bitcoin does have the fundamental value right now, which it didn't have, which it didn't used to have, you know, back in 2017. I'm talking about the infrastructure.
Right.
The infrastructure wasn't there. You know, the entire market from 2017 was retail driven.
Right. You couldn't get insured custody that would be satisfactory to an institution. And like now there's lots and lots of suppliers.
Exactly. Right. So this is sort of like upside down situation when we had the few retails, but we have a lot of institutions just literally just waiting. Right.
Yeah.
And they bought the dip. They bought the dip in March 2020. Yeah. And, you know, that's, like this was a really good timing, you know, to be on the market, paradoxically. So yeah, with all that having said, you know, I genuinely believe that mainstream is always getting super late. I mean, mainstream means liquidity, right? The main liquidity pool, as I said. And what we are seeing right now is when I was writing my yesterday sort of like a Bitcoin market report for my people, for my clients, I was talking about this NUPL, as I said, this net unrealized profit and loss.
Right.
Now, I can actually try to share the screen, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
There's
Willy Wu talks about this concept of the average Bitcoin price. Like what? Like if you look at what the average price someone paid for per Bitcoin, based on the price that everyone has paid for Bitcoins, like that being the thing that's driving the underlying like baseline for the price of Bitcoin. Like it's because if you, and I'm really curious as your net unrealized profits, but it seems to be working on a similar basis in that you're like, there's more and more money being left on the table, and they can sell all the way down to this level. And the people who bought in earlier are the people who can sort of go lower. So kind of like in OPEC, you have the Saudis who can pump oil at $2 a barrel. And then you have others who like their minimum cost is $40 a barrel. And because Bitcoin is a limited supply, what you've got is this ongoing long-term macro trend of as people sell out of their position, realize their profit from low cost Bitcoin to high profit, you then reset the total the lower bound that people are willing to sell Bitcoin down to.
So as far as I understand, what you're asking is mainly about the sort of like a statistical nature behind, I mean, what I'm thinking you might be referring to, perhaps subconsciously, is the overall statistical nature, as I said, the per the prices, which is the time series sort of like the, you know, the financial data distribution, that is not normally distributed. It means, you know, first of all, that trends do exist, and when the trends exist, you know, all the cycles do exist as well. But more importantly, the prices tend to oscillate. Right, we are talking about these cycles that happen across all the time frames. That's what we call sort of like a fractal nature. Right, the fractals are the figures, are the functions that sort of like infinitely consist of themselves. Right, the triangle consisting of smaller triangles, which are consisting of smaller, even smaller triangles. Right, and so on infinitely down the scale. And similarly, you would see the oscillations, the market cycles, like entire world vibrates. Right, for me being sort of like, you know, for my main profession, my main background, being the chemical technology engineer, you know, I dealt a lot of with chemistry, with physics, of course. And the truth is, if you look at it, that every sort of like particle, every atom, every subatomic structures, which is, you know, like protons, neutrons, electrons, and those consist of quarks, and quarks even consist of some smaller particles. Long story short, every part of the matter, you know, every piece, every body of the matter oscillates and vibrates. So if we as people consist of the matter, then we oscillate as well, right? We have the, you know, day, night cycle. We have the death and life and death cycle, right? We overall have the cycles. Every cycles are everywhere. And we as people create the market. So the market side pretty much like go in cycles as well, right?
Sure. So a random walk with an upward trend.
Well, it's not a random walk. That's the case, right? I mean, some people believe it's a random walk, but then this is more of not understanding or misunderstanding, misconcepting, you know, this entire sort of like a random walk here. I'm being honest. You know, you would see trends exist. I mean, find that trends exist and that we are seeing bull markets and bear markets, you know, interchangeably, just denies the fact of the random walk, you know, itself. So it is a very fundamentally sort of like misconception. But here, I'm talking about the overall sort of like price nature that it oscillates across the markets. And when it oscillates, it means there is a volatility. And this volatility, just like with some, let's say, regular distribution of data, let's say some statistical data, right? You would have a lot of points, right, being distributed. And for the prices, it occurs that if the trends exist, you know, they tend to distribute in some continuity. And when you have an average, right, when you actually just conduct the trend or an average, you know, coming with the sort of like least squares method or something, you would come out the, you know, with some notion of standard deviation, right, that the average skew of the data, right, against the trend. And those oscillate around the trends. Mm-hmm. And that's the principle. So it's called like a mean reversion. So it means if there is, for example, like a mean, which is the moving average, mm-hmm. and the price is pretty much like oscillate, then whatever comes down, you can be sure that it's going to pull back to the average, because that's the nature of the fluctuation. That's the nature of the volatility and of cycles, mm-hmm. and statistical sort of like reasoning, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that the markets oscillate, you can already profit from that, because if you use moving averages, right, you can know that whenever it deviates heavily against the average, then at one point soon it's going to go down to the average because there is a mean reversion.
Do you think that the fact that technical analysis has become so big that it is essentially a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Of course.
Like the fact that everyone goes, oh, the mean reversion is going to happen. And because people trade on that belief, it ends up happening. A self-fulfilling action in market.
100%. Yes, it is. 100%. It's just like superstitions, you know, black cat crossing the road, right? A road. When you crash a car into a tree because you saw it, you know, it's because you drive unconsciously rather than because of poor black cat, right? So it's exactly the point. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but doesn't negate the fact that it works, right?
Yeah, it's. I mean, like in some ways, it's a micro version of the same argument around Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin has value because people believe it does.
Exactly.
Right. And what we're seeing here is human behavior in a self-reinforcing loop. Like it's fascinating. That's sort of what for me was the big difference between crypto and the traditional markets at a macro level, is like the traditional markets, the way you value a company has some sort of like basis on cash flow analysis and whether or not the company's going to live and all that kind of stuff. And then you look at things like Dogecoin, mm-hmm. and you know, that hasn't had active development on it, yeah. for I think a decade or like a long time. Maybe it's not a decade old, but like it was created and that was sort of it. But like these are unkillable systems, or they're very, very yeah. difficult to die. And so what you get is you get all of this sort of like meme and self-reinforcing view, both on the upside and the downside, that happens inside the market. Okay. So that, all that being yeah. said, I'm curious to know what your technical analysis of the Radix chart would look like if you were going to go and dive in and try and convince me of technical analysis being a thing and that it shows something off to do with Radix. I'm ready to be convinced.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Just before, I mean, just to close on the topic of NUPL so that people know why I actually pulled out the chart.
Yes.
This just shows the amount of money being left on the table, as I said, right? The red curve. And it tells you again that on average, let's say if you go and put a straight line back in history, you would see this entire sort of like entire periods where Bitcoin per the NUPL, per the net unrealized profit and loss, just saw the reversals. And they always, apparently, as I said, come in line in tandem the actual liquidity peaks, right? And those represent the liquidity peaks. So we are in the danger zone. And that's my point, right? And I was talking about, as I said, about like while preparing my yesterday's report, which is free on my website, by the way. I was talking about the compression between 65 and 70% of the bull market, in my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And it's based on the sentiment. It's based on the overall liquidity, as I say, like performance. And of course, the bigger the volatility on the markets, the closer to the peaks it is, because that's the sort of like the reversal nature that there is always the biggest volatility, right? When there's a bubble, especially, and the pumps go vertical, right? But at the same time, when they have enough liquidity, which is going to be, you know, the case anytime soon, over the next couple of months, then you would see extremely strong dumps as well, right? Because those big players are going to exit the market because they would have enough liquidity, and then it's going to like pull back very quickly because there are strong engagement on the and participation on the side of the mainstream people who have just joined. Right, because of the aggressive marketing campaigns, the Apple, you know, just pays the Tesla buyers, right? The Google, Amazon, you're going to see more of that accepting Bitcoin because that's their main goal. Like Elon Musk is the wealthiest reportedly investor, right, on the planet, as the Tesla holder and the other companies holder, because he knows what he's doing with his money. And he's not really willing, you know, doing that for the investment purpose, right? Because what's the point of entering an asset that just appreciated 20x or 10x in a matter of under 1 year? So that's definitely not the investment purpose. The main purpose is to build the liquidity, right? And that's sort of like what this chart is showing. So the main takeaway, as I say, is...
Hang on, sorry. Your proposition is that Elon Musk didn't put $1.5 billion worth of Tesla cash into Bitcoin because he cared about the appreciation of the asset. You're saying that
that's secondary, in my opinion.
So, but why would he care about the liquidity? If you're not in it, why would he care about building the liquidity of the asset?
No. Whoever said he wasn't in Bitcoin before.
So as in he personally held Bitcoin and then he made Tesla buy $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin in addition to his personal holdings.
Can be, right? I mean, again, this is like the biggest, the world wealthiest people on the planet well know what it means to buy low and sell high, right?
Sure.
So they are the richest people because they know that. So if they do the opposite, that just doesn't really have anything to do with the actual investment. I mean, this is just a secondary purpose, if any. But of course, this
comes back to the thing that I was starting with, which is like, if you like something, buy it. Like, it doesn't, your entry point is less important if you're taking a 10-year view. Like
I cannot really agree with that.
Okay. All right. So
I mean, what if you bought the 2017 peak and then dumped all your rest?
This is your view. Like, how long's your view? If you bought 2017 and you had a 5-year view, you're 2x on your money now.
Yeah, I mean,
no, you're 2.5x on your money.
If you account the inflation, then it's going to be less. But I know perfectly what you mean. And just to kind of like quote it, you know, I mean, this is the way for the Elon to respond, to actually send the message to retail. Listen, I'm going to buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. So if I'm going to do that, then millions of other people are going to do that. And he's just earning money, like, you know.
You don't think he wants Bitcoin to exist in the world. You don't think it's because he's like, Bitcoin is an important new invention that humanity needs to push forward. So you don't think there's even a small part of that there?
I mean, of course there is. You know, this is the factual belief, the fundamental reasoning, as I said, the deflationary model of Bitcoin. This is what definitely is just like considered like a hedge against the, you know, listen, the white paper was released, right, to the internet 2 weeks after the Lehman Brothers and collapse.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
That was reportedly the reason. But yeah, I mean, there is definitely so much more to be discussed throughout, you know, why markets move and so on. But the question, I mean, the main part is that we are slowly in the last sort of like a final mainstream liquidity building sort of like a process, in my opinion. So what I'm doing is I'm slowly, no, not instantly or like very gradually and slowly but surely, planning starting to plan my exit strategy. Right?
Interesting. So yeah, you think we've got a couple more months left of the bull run and then we're done? Okay.
I think yes. Interesting. I think yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk in 2 months and see where we stand.
I'm happy.
I'm intrigued to come back to this. I like coming back to predictions and doing retrospectives. Cool. So what have we got here?
Here we have the Radix, the XRD token, of course.
Yeah.
Let's just hopefully let it load, right? Because it refuses currently. But the most important part about the sort of like new tokens, right? Newly listed tokens, fresh price action, which doesn't really, you know, just give a lot of previous sort of like, you know, look back history. Technical analysis, again, it works because people use that, right? Because people see patterns, because people, for example, see, you know, this sort of like symmetrical triangle, right?
Right.
You see this volatility pretty much like, you know, just contracting.
Yeah.
Then because people see that, you know, they just read in a book that it should break up, right? So they are going to buy that. And guess what? It pulls the price higher, right? So yeah, it's actually hilarious.
You're the first technical analysis person I've spoken to who's been like, it's just a self-reinforcing prophecy. But I mean, that does mean it's a fallacy as well, right?
Exactly. I mean, as long as you listen, like, the random walk, right? If you apply the coin toss, for example, for whether to go long or short,
right?
Then you're going to get pretty much like in the higher number sort of like data in the big sample, you're going to be like pretty much the 50%, you know, just with the 50% win rate, you're going to, by applying the same traits, you're going to pretty much end up in a very same place that you came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
But most important part is that here, you know, by using technical analysis, it can actually make money. And this is scientifically confirmed and proven. And
not investment advice. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, and this is technical analysis. It's actually hilarious because many banks here are using TA. But technical analysis is right now in a place where medicine, you know, when the medicine that we know known today was like 200 years ago. People disbelieved, like nobody believed in the existence of germs, of viruses. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And look, it does exist, right? And we know that perfectly. So this is a very similar place. But long story short, here, you know, for the Radix token, definitely we need, for the big credibility over the technicals, we would need so much more data, you know, in the back,
right?
In the look back period. So here, you know, just talking and commenting on the short term price action, you are having a very narrow like a view, right, on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only tell, you know, that here's some sort of like a level of support, right, some zone mm-hmm. of support. So I would never be dare enough to sell anything just down there, mm-hmm. right? And locally, you also know that there is some sort of like, you know, prior resistance level that prices reacted negatively to that, right? So because a technical analysis works as a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, people would think that because it worked like that in the past, then it must secure this way, you know, the same way and behave exactly the same way right now, mm-hmm. because that's the only way to rationalize things which you don't understand. So here again, that's the reasons why of course supports and resistances also work. But more importantly, as I said, what drives the projects, what drives the price itself is an intrinsic value mainly, right? And from the long-term perspective, fundamentals shape the price.
Right.
And here within the Radix, you know, I would so much more rather, you know, just to watch the fundamentals rather than technicals while basing any, you know, just sort of like trading decisions, because the fundamentals is what matters. When you have little use for TA in here, then well, what can you do about it, right? Because it's freshly listed. But of course, you know, as the more listings will appear in the future, then the more liquidity will appear, and the more sort of like the broader you go through the market, and the more technical analysis would apply as well automatically. So here, again, I'm actually, you know, just I'm equipped with a good portion of the tokens. I'm actually about to stake this entire amount as well. So most importantly, we need to rely as traders and as investors on what sort of like what's factual, not on what we believe. You know, nobody knows where Bitcoin price is going to stop. Nobody knows when the day, you know, just comes. But what you know for sure is that, for example, it appreciated 12x in value in under 1 year, and that's what matters.
Right.
Right. So here, similarly, again, I don't definitely recommend, you know, short-term trades in that, because the Uniswap fees would often kill, right? Or even if other exchanges. I mean, there is the question, the matter of liquidity, but more importantly, of the fundamentals, because in my opinion, it's heavily undervalued project right now. I mean, per the technicals, per the fundamentals, you guys are heavily undervalued.
Thank you.
And you're heavily undervalued because you are not so, let's say, well-known, let's push well, you know, in the mainstream. And that's the point. So the price is going to gain the traction when the liquidity comes, and the liquidity comes with the listings, right?
Right.
So with that having said, you know, with having said that all of it, I do believe that what we are seeing right now is one big accumulation zone. This, right? So anything technically in the long-term perspective, or fundamentally, in my opinion, any buy, you know, between, you know, 6 cents and 20 cents is going to equip traders with decent amount of profits. Mm-hmm. And that's what I sort of like, you know, just based off the fundamentals can read in between the lines. I love the project development. The community is very strong for you. You have a very, very loyal community, right? Although it's still sort of like in an expansion, in a building process.
Right. Shout out to the Raiders community. You guys are awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you to my mom, right? Exactly. I love it. Yeah. But again, whatever, from the technical point of view, whatever happens, you know, between sort of like the range bound, between the accumulation zone, it doesn't matter. I mean, it can go, you know, upwards, downwards, go back in time, whatever. The most important part is that it breaks out at one point. And this mm-hmm. is what shows the direction. Because right. if it breaks out, then crowds are going to start joining, right?
Right.
And this is sort of like the main long-term signal, in my opinion, is going to appear no sooner than the actual breakout towards this, right?
Right.
So, technically, as I said, whatever happens in between is technically, and from the technical point of view, and in my opinion, fundamental as well, like a good buying opportunity, of course. Right. This is, again, not financial advice. This is my sort of like thoughts being put mm-hmm. here. Again, but from the technical point of view, this is the most important part, this pattern, this price sort of like, you know, just setting that oscillates within the given extremes, the price bounds that are often sort of like equal, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the highs and lows. And this is what classifies that as a range, as a trading range, as a right. rectangle, as a flat pattern, whatever you name that. What's right. most important is that this is going sideways, which means it's not trending up, it's not trending down, it's going sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it a good buying opportunity in this very case, in my right. opinion. So this is how I read it.
Okay, understood. So like the input of technical analysis is always supplemented. Essentially what I'm hearing is like the input of technical analysis is always supplemented with a fundamental understanding of what you are buying. I mean, the way that you work with it.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay. And like, what are the risks of using technical analysis? Like what do people do wrong and how do people mess up?
So it's not of risks, you know, for using technical analysis or not, but it's for executing the trades and timing it right or wrong point, right? So those are the risks. Any sort of like financial movement, any time you move your money, you know, you have your cash, you put it in a sock and you just walk out of your home, you can get robbed. This is a risk, right? Mm-hmm. And the risk is defined by how much money you're bearing in your sock, right? So similarly, you know, on crypto, you can get hacked, or your portfolios, your wallets can get compromised, you know, get hacked. This also comes with risk.
Right.
So if you are not really over-diversified and you hold, you know, 10 loans, you took out 10 loans and you put it all in crypto in one place with no password and no two-factor authentication, then, well, you're risking a lot, right? You're risking the entire stake.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more about, you know, risk from the more of the, you know, sort of like economic point of view and the investment point of view, finance point of view, rather than just technical analysis itself, because the mistakes, the errors, you know, are coming which skews our perception, right? I'm talking about the perception biases.
Mm-hmm.
There is in the behavioral finance, there is an entire section that is called the prospect theory, which-
Cool, what, sorry?
Prospect theory.
Prospect theory, okay.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. And main sort of like a message of prospect theory is that we as people tend to dynamically change our reference bases. Mm-hmm. So for example, when you enter, it's actually confirmed also scientifically and based on the researchers, but when you have an idea that you want to buy an asset, mm-hmm. right? Then it's confirmed that the more often you look at a price, I mean, let's assume you get in, right? Let's assume you buy in. Then you have it in a portfolio to be able to track it, right? And And that more frequently, the more often you actually just look and check the update the portfolio, the higher the chances that you're going to actually just exit your initial plan.
Right.
Or deviate against.
Right. Yep.
And what most traders, especially, you know, the older generations, but those who are taught, you know, patience, they are going to tell you that the most important thing that traders do is to wait.
Right.
And Peter Brand, actually, you know, somebody whom I definitely respect a lot. Peter Brand, you know, commented just exactly with similar sort of like paraphrase of what, you know, that the main thing, you know, as a response to the Steve Burns asking about what's the most important thing for traders, he literally said it's to wait. And I couldn't agree more, right? Because by waiting, assuming you have the knowledge, assuming you know, you know, why you're here, what you're doing with as a trader, that you are aware and rational to some extent, then the more often you change, the more often you look at a portfolio, the more often you check the phone, right? Check the app, whatever, then the higher the chances you're actually going to at one point say, okay, there's been one micro minute dump, you know?
Right.
I gotta get out.
Right.
I need to get out. And they get out and then all of a sudden they feel you know, not even relieved. They feel, Jesus, what have I done?
Right.
I just left.
Right.
What happened? And of course, then the moment that usually the human psychology is, you know, works in this way, that the moment that you leave the market, it actually starts pumping.
Right. Because
when you capitulate, you capitulate at the perfect bottom when the emotions are the peaking. That's right. The point.
Right. So what you're saying is when you most want to accumulate, sell, and when you most want to sell, buy.
Exactly. That's the point.
It's interesting because it's the exact opposite problem than the everyday investor faces. The everyday investor, the problem that they face is inertia, right? So most people don't sell out of something when when they should, because it's just it's not at their fingertips. Like if I'm in a fund, oh, I have to like send an email and ask for the fund to be. It's just easier to keep the money in there. Or if I've been like, great example of this is employee options on traded companies. Like the number of people who don't sell their stock and diversify their portfolio and just leave it in there, inertia is a huge one. And so like, that's the thing that I often talk to people about, like when my friends who are not traders, is this concept of inertia. And there's a great saying that one of my friends has got, which is, if you're not selling, you're buying. And I love the phrase, because it means like, if you're holding it, like imagine that you weren't and you just had that money, would you go back in, or would you not go back in, or not as much? And that's the whole inertia problem.
Yeah. I mean, I could only agree, right? For those perhaps not necessarily aware or familiarized with the word inertia itself, it just means the lack, right? Whenever you, let's say, this is what happens when you're, from the physical point of view, there's this inertia power, this inertia force, actually, sorry. When you get on a train and the train starts to move, you are pulled backwards, because this inertia is what makes you pretty much like stay, what makes you want to, well, your body stay in the same place in the unchanged conditions. That's the inertia, right? Mm-hmm. And similarly, the other way, when the train is decelerating, right, when it's putting on brakes, then you are actually just pushed back, like not pushed back, but pushed forward, right? Yeah. But it's like invisible force. And this is the inertia force.
Right. And a body in motion will continue in motion until an equal and opposite force is applied upon it.
Exactly.
Newtonian
dynamics.
Right, exactly. Like, and so like,
dynamics.
But people do that. Like they get in like changing is painful. Changing anything is painful.
Exactly. And this is what I'm referring to. I mean, this also is part of the perception biases known as the prospect theory, because this is what you said is usually called like an endowment effect. This is a mix between endowment effect and the overall aversion to loss aversion. Because people tend to be afraid of our own losses. We tend to be afraid of admitting our own mistakes, because it would mean, you know, we would crash our personal imagination of who we are in our heads, in our minds, right? So we often are too afraid to actually just make the move. And the more it dumps, then the more sort of like in doubt to that you are, because you say, okay, I'm 50% down, like, Can it go any lower, right? And those who are not experienced with crypto, they would imagine that it's going to rebound anywhere, you know, just down there. But it actually won't, right? And it won't do that, and it just collapses another 50%, right? until it goes down, 50, like 90, 80% on average, as I said, which is typical to the parabolic movements. So it's an endowment effect. Somebody just like you said, with the options, right? For the employee options, the companies give the options to the employees, right? And they are endowed. This is a present. This is a gift. So they feel emotionally attached to that. They feel rewarded for that. So they won't necessarily want to sell because they would give away something that they got. They would make them feel bad. So this is another story. This is another point to that. But this is all kind of like wrapped under the perception biases, which are explained by the behavioral economics, behavioral psychology, the finance, which makes us skew and deviate against our own plans. That's the entire gist, why 90% of traders lose money.
So basically you're saying to be a trader, you've got to be mentally strong. You've got to be able to do the Zen, the sort of like, I don't care what's happened in the market for the last hour, day, week, month, and just be like, I know what my plan is. I'm sticking to the plan.
Yeah, Adrian, that's the point.
It's been such a pleasure having you on. If people want to learn out more about what you do or like follow you on Twitter, like where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah. Feel free, everybody, to go and check out my Twitter account, which is @crypto_bird with the B at the end, right? Not a bird. And this comes along with the second account under @theburbnest with the B as well. And all quoted, on top of it within our amazing website under the www.theburbnest.com, where you're going to find tons of educational materials for traders, for investors, to learn how to actually just not belong to the 90% of the losing people on the market.
90% by number rather than by value, but yes.
Yeah.
It's been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to catching up in a couple of months, 3 months, to see whether or not Bitcoin has done what you said it's going to do.
It's mutual. I appreciate it. I'm happy to repeat it.
Cheers. Take care.